I'm recording.
Are you?
Yeah. Always so, recording. This is officially episode 3, right?
Right.
Of the Molly Mish podcast. And up until this episode, it's just been us talking. So, this is very special. I'm sure you guys have heard extra voices.
You guys feel special.
Hello.
Ooh, listen to that deep baritone. Sexy voice. Hello. So we have Jason and Angela from BodesWell.com. Very popular adult website.
Okay, this isn't going.
This is not going the way it was planned. Okay. No. I mean, you know, kids can go to their website too. But if you guys don't know who they are, go check them out, read their blog. We're here to talk about, which several people have asked. Are you still laughing?
She said she was going to make a peep on this episode, and she's just sitting here laughing.
It's a lot of peeps. Laughing counts as peep.
Okay.
We're here to talk because a few people have asked, and then we decided this was going to be our episode number 3, which is, since we're all here in Europe with our vans, we're going to talk about and tell everybody who's interested how you get your own van from the United States to Europe. And since we both have recent experiences with our vans, and we've been talking a little bit already, and even shipping from these same two continents, they seem to differ quite a bit. But generally speaking, we hope that this conversation would be helpful for somebody who wants to do this also. Right?
Right.
Do you guys feel like that you're ready to share that experience?
Sure, yeah. And I think the takeaway is it's not that hard. It's not totally different than shipping a package overseas. Just the package is your car.
Right.
It's more or less that.
You don't have to wrap it.
You don't have to wrap it, but there are a lot less steps when you ship a package.
Right.
So you can't just...
There's some red tape and some legwork involved.
Yeah.
More stamps.
Right. So we can start from the beginning. So Marlene kindly made a little outline for sort of our side of things, which I think we can use as like a guideline to talk through the beginning to the end. You know, you guys have a blog that has a blog post about this as well. So they can go to BodesWell.com and then search for...
You can just Google BodesWell shipping and you'll get like 10 articles on various... vehicle shipping experiences we've had.
Yeah. So you guys have shipped from Panama to Colombia.
Yep.
From Colombia back to Texas.
Yep.
And now from Texas to UK.
All true.
Right? So in this one, we'll specifically talk about the Texas to UK one. And then you can throw in some useful information about how different it can be to do it in South America and Central America as well. Because it's... You know, there are a lot of things that I think you would do in this situation that you wouldn't do, right, in South America. And also the price. I think price would be worth knowing because we were just talking about how it's the same price practically to ship from Colombia to Texas as it is from Texas to the UK.
Yeah, it's not that different. You know, a lot of the cost here is paperwork and agent fees and port fees and loading fees and... There are a lot of fees involved, and the fees are about the same as the actual freight cost. And it's almost, regardless of where you ship to or from, I think that's probably the case most of the time.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go from this first step. And then maybe on our end, Marlene handled all the logistics, or just all the conversation, the contacts, and then like the communication. So Marlene, do you want to talk about who we... used, who we researched, and how we decided on who to use?
Well, I gotta look at my spreadsheet.
Okay.
So the first thing we did was contact shipping agents for quotes. I don't remember how I did this. I think I Googled it. I found one or two, and then I looked at who Jason and Angela used, and I contacted that person too. And I ended up getting quotes that were a few $100 different from each other, but it wasn't a large difference. And then I selected somebody who was the most responsive to me, and it ended up being the cheapest also. And that was Megan from Seabridge Lamprecht.
So it's worth noting that they charge based on the dimensions of your vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to give them not only make, model, year, but also width, height, and length. Weight? Do we have to give them weight?
We didn't have weight, and they just pulled up whatever was on the Sprinter website.
Okay, so yeah.
It could be heavier, it could be lighter, we have no idea.
Right, and also, technically, you're not supposed to have anything else in it. So you're only supposed to ship your vehicle empty. And they stressed that to us multiple times, saying that, you know, it has to be totally empty, totally empty. And we're just like, oh, yeah, of course, sure. But nobody ships it empty. So what about you guys?
Yeah, I think that's so for sure that's the official rule. And I think they do that for liability purposes because a lot of times things go missing. Each time we've shipped, we've had things in the vehicle. And generally we try to kind of hide things away so it's not super obvious that we have stuff in the vehicle. But each time we've shipped it with our own possessions in the vehicle, and it hasn't been a problem, even though they specifically said you're not allowed to have anything in the van. So,
and they say a lot of other things, too, that we'll touch on later, like you're supposed to have a certain amount of fuel or less, you're not supposed to have any propane and stuff like that. But can you talk more about your search for an agent and you getting the quote and who you ended up with and why?
Yeah, so I, started with just internet search for this last trip and probably contacted 10 different agents. And I thought I would have the most luck with an agent local to me because I wanted to ship out of Galveston, Texas because I have family there. And I, out of the 10 or so agents I contacted, maybe only 4 of them responded to me.
They don't like responding for some reason.
Yeah, you're small potatoes. You're shipping one thing one time, and so you have to find the right agent. The ones local to me generally did not respond, and I found out that just wasn't an issue at all. It didn't matter where the agent was located physically. I ended up selecting an agent that was based out of Florida, and we handled everything over email and FedEx. Ultimately, it went with, like Marlene said, the person who was the most responsive, who also happened to be the lowest quote, and so it worked out pretty well.
And that was what company?
Oh, I wasn't prepared. I didn't know there was going to be a quiz. I have to pull this up.
There's not just a quiz. Your future depends on this.
Yeah. I think her name was Mary. Does that sound familiar?
We called your lady, too, and she was very enthusiastic in the first correspondence, and then afterwards she kind of blew us off.
Yeah. So it was a Sims Waters and Associates.
I think it has to do with their her experience working with you.
You ruined it for us.
Well, the thing is, so after we shipped, I wrote a post on this, and I put some posts on Facebook, and I got a lot of comments and a lot of people saying, hey, perfect timing. I was just about to ship. So I'm wondering if, because I put her info there, that she got flooded with a bunch of people saying, hey, how much is it going to cost? And she maybe got tired of that. So
they probably, I would imagine they get hundreds of requests and only one or two ever come through.
Yeah, and so that's why I would recommend when you do finally contact an agent and ask for a quote that you have a very specific request. Mm-hmm. Figure out what kind of shipping you want to do, whether it's roll-in, roll-off, or container. Figure out what shipping companies you want to use. Like there's lots of different companies like K-Line or Wallenius Williamson or Ho or IVSS. There are all these different shipping companies out there, and you can find their ship schedules and what date they sail and what ports they go to. Mm-hmm. And then when you contact your agents, give them the specifics. Say, I want to ship on this date. I want it to be on this boat and leave at this port and enter that port. Because otherwise...
Oh, the finger tapping.
Yeah, sorry. Otherwise, if you just kind of blindly, hey, I want to ship my car and I'm not sure where, tell me the cheapest and I'm flexible on dates. Like, they're not a travel agent, right?
Right. And just to be very specific about the method of shipping we're talking about, I was talking about RoRo, which Jason mentioned. There's multiple ways to ship. RoRo is a very specific way, and it uses a very specific type of ship, which is like a car hauler. Every car is driven on, and it's strapped down to the floor on each level. And these are the cars that they will use to bring like imported new cars from one country to another. So essentially what's happening in our case, maybe with yours too, is that these ships are mainly used for automobile manufacturers to bring it into the country.
New cars.
New cars. So that's who they really want to work with. They really don't want to work with onesie twosie people like us, but on the other hand,
but they will.
They want to fill those boats as much as they can on the way back because they go back empty and they're going to pay for that boat to go back anyways. So they will work with you. A little persistence helps. And number two, you want to make it sound very clear at the beginning that you're not wasting their time by talking to you.
And the method RORO means roll on, roll off, which I don't think we've mentioned.
Right. Yeah. Right. Roll on, roll off. So if you're gonna Google shipping, you would search RORO shipping agents if you're searching for any kind of specific thing. So it's RORO. So was your cost based on dimensions as well?
Yeah, so both dimensions and weight. So they want to know how much space is this going to take up on the boat and what's it weigh. And from that, they determine the freight charges. And that's, right. So that's the charge that's going to vary based on your vehicle. The other charges like documentation and loading and unloading are probably fixed.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much just the person having to do some paperwork. So for you, the other difference between us and you is that we were shipping a relatively new vehicle. So they were able to get some of this data from like the Mercedes website. They got our gross vehicle weight from the Mercedes website. And I'm sure for you, you had to tell them your weight. Did you just estimate?
Yeah, they asked me and, I Googled it.
Yeah.
And what do you have? What kind of vehicle do you have?
It's a 1971 Volkswagen camper van.
So dimensions-wise, you know, just as a ballpark compared to our Mercedes Sprinter 170 high roof, it's probably half the volume.
Or less, maybe. Yeah, and obviously much less weight too, right? So
yeah,
so our freight was far lower than yours, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think your freight we just talked about was probably half, right? Cause you said it was like 800 or something. Ours was like 1600, 1700. So okay, so and then once you get to that point, you follow through with an actual booking.
Yeah, you confirm, and they'll send you a dock receipt, and this is essentially your paper to take to the port. And I don't know if you want to go into that later about getting into the port, but this is, you know, it's like when you want to FedEx a package, you get a little piece of paper with your tracking. Well, that's your dock receipt, and you're going to take that down with the vehicle to the dock, and that's what you're going to use to drop it off. And
And like us, I'm sure you had to prepare a bunch of copies of documents, and some of them had to be originals.
Yeah, we had to send our original vehicle title. And again, since we weren't local to our agent, we just FedExed it. I think only the title was the only thing they asked for. And we sent that off to them, and then they used that for customs.
Yeah. So what was your involvement this whole time, Angela?
No involvement.
No comment.
So you're saying that you just sat around and did nothing while Jason handled the shipping?
So we were...
And also took care of your son?
Yeah, at the time,
the homeschooling.
We were in Winter Park, Colorado, and that's 1,000 miles from the nearest port. So I drove the car down to Galveston, about 1,000 or 1,200 miles away, and did a bunch of work before it loaded it.
I went snowboarding.
She went snowboarding.
So let's talk a little bit about why you chose Galveston specifically. I mean, obviously that's an area that you know well.
Yeah, I was born in Galveston. I have both me and Angela have family in that area. And when you're considering cost, you know, a major cost is going to be, you know, how both when you're leaving and when you arrive, what are your expenses there? And if you have friends or family that can put you up and cook you meals and whatever, well, that's going to cut your costs way, way down. And so Galveston is not only an easy port because it's pretty small and they do RORO shipping, but I had family there. So, you know, my dad picked me up from the port after I dropped off my van and took me to dinner. So worked out pretty well.
He also had to work on the car before we shipped it. There was some work we wanted to do before we got to Europe, and his brother has a shop.
I think you just assume when you have a 72 Volkswagen.
Right. Well, it was a lot
71.
Easier.
71, sorry. Well,
okay. It was a lot easier to do the work in Texas than in
freezing Colorado
in the winter. So
that's a really good point, though, because you do have to consider, for somebody who was living out of their camper, where are you going to live while this vehicle is gone? And for you guys to ship from Galveston to the UK was going to take much longer in terms of number of days.
Yeah, we intentionally chose a slower boat, and it was 30 days from Galveston to Southampton, UK. I think we could have chosen a voyage that was like 14 days or so, but we decided that we really didn't care how long it took, and you know, a month was fine because we had family on the shipping side that we wanted to visit before we left anyway, and we had friends in the UK that we wanted to visit. So you know, we had time. So
yeah, and we had already planned our trip that included a week in Iceland on the way to Europe, and so
you're burning up some more time there on the way.
Yeah, I mean, we had time before the car was going to get there.
Yeah, so for us, it was a little bit different because we're from the West Coast, and all of our family's from the West Coast, and it was not practical, even though there are ro-ro ships that go to L.A., and we literally live like within a stone's throw from the port of L.A., or where we were at the time building the van. But because we're going to Europe, shipping from the West Coast is possible, but you got to go through the Panama Canal. So being from Galveston, you're technically on the Atlantic side. So that didn't matter. For us, it mattered, and that's why we chose to drive all the way across to Baltimore. And that was the one that you were talking about, Jason, that we got as fast of a quote as a 14-day voyage. But it ended up being more like 20 days, just because there's always delays. Did you guys experience that? You had extra delays.
We had the boat actually arrived to the UK on time, but then we were hung up for, I think, 6 total days in customs. And it was a paperwork screw-up as far as we could tell. But, you know, if we weren't staying with friends and we had to pay for an extra 6 days in a hotel in London, well, that would cost more than the whole cost of shipping.
Yeah.
So
you got to consider that.
So, again,
for sure.
Figuring out, you know, your expenses on either side, that could eat up all your budget.
And also, I think worth noting is that you had to, in Galveston, you had to drop the car off much earlier than you were expecting.
Oh, right. That's another thing. It's because they do a lineup and customs clearance, you have to drop your vehicle off a week before the ship sails.
Mm-hmm.
And so again,
we had to do that as well.
Was it one?
It was 7 days. Yeah.
7 days.
I don't think we were expecting that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Had a lot.
So it ended up being
do.
More like,
Jason had a lot
it was more like 45 days, right, from start to end. Including the delay in the front and delay at the end.
Yeah.
Did your boat take extra unexpected stops?
It didn't, but it already had a whole lot of stops because our boat left from Galveston. It went all around the Gulf Coast, around the tip of Florida, all the way up the Eastern Seaboard. Stopping at all the major ports, then across. It passed the UK, went to Germany, then went back into Belgium, and then up to the UK.
So it may have been maybe even the same route that our boat
could have
would
been.
Have taken, except Baltimore was the last U.S. port for us. Was it? Did it stop
no,
at
it
Jersey?
Jersey?
It stopped at Okay, yeah. So ours was supposed to go from Baltimore to Germany, one stop in Germany, and then to Zeebrugge, which is where we were. Supposed to only make one stop before, but it ended up taking, I think, 3 stops. That we didn't know about. Ours was ended up being like a 17-day voyage to get to where we are, but with the 7-day before that we had to get into the port, and then we had a 2-day delay. I think it was because it was a weekend, right? For some reason, we couldn't get on the weekend, even though they were able to clear our customs on the weekend. So that's something to definitely consider. So. The best thing to do, though, is still to be there early or be there when they say it's going to get there. It's better than being there after the boat or the car is ready for you, because I think bad stuff happens if they're ready for you to pick it up and you don't.
Yeah, there are penalties and port storage fees that can accumulate if you don't show up to pick up your car after it's ready to be retrieved. But in general, I think you're probably unlikely.
Give or take a day or two.
I wouldn't show up early. It's highly unlikely that the boat's going to arrive and be released from customs early. But
no, but get there when they say it's supposed to be there, because it would inevitably be delayed by a day or two at least.
Yep.
So our plan was that we would get there the same day that the boat was supposed to arrive in the port.
And we still had to wait a week.
And we had to wait a week. Yeah. So let's see. Let's talk about the next step.
Well, I just want to... Jason just had to send his title, like FedEx. But I had to do like a power attorney form. Did you have to do that?
Oh, yeah, you're right.
There's
I forgot
like different
that part.
Forms. I had to do a power attorney. I had to do copies of passport and my title. I didn't have to send original, just copies of everything. I had to get some EIN number from the IRS website.
Oh, I forgot about all this. You're totally right. I had to do that too.
Update the blog post.
And then I got a doc receipt after I turned all that in a week afterwards.
Yeah, but you know the your agent, they'll ours like sent us a PDF document that had all these steps. Here's how you get your EIN number. We need that so when we bill you, we reference your EIN number. And the power attorney, here's the form, and just sign it, notarize it, send it back. And that's so that we can act on your behalf with customs, showing that you're exporting your vehicle.
Right.
You know, it all made sense. But yeah, there were these few extra steps. And again, we did it all by both email and FedEx. And so we never, ever met our shipping agent.
We didn't either. Even though our shipping agent's office was in Baltimore, there was no reason for us to go in and talk to her. Another thing worth noting about all this, even though you get a quote, you get a doc receipt, you bring your car, you get all this stuff, there was no money exchanged until the boat actually leaves the port.
Yeah, we didn't get a bill. We had our quote, and I had them verify multiple times that everything in the quote was everything, that there weren't extra fees. But then we didn't actually get a bill until the ship sailed.
Right. And we had to ask a couple of times, too. Hey, when do we pay? How much is it? When do we pay? We got to make sure. Because if from our end, it didn't feel like it was going to happen until we pay somebody.
Right, right.
You know, and if they don't want our money, that means they can cancel us at any time. I didn't want that. But it felt good when we got there. So on our end for Baltimore, then we can actually talk about the process of getting our vehicles ready for what we had to do to prep the vehicle. And physically delivering the vehicle to the port, right? So we can talk about our personal experience with it, and then you can talk about yours. Ours was, you know, you hear a lot of stories. One of the worst things you can do is to start Googling whether or not your car would get vandalized, because first of all, the only people that put stuff on the internet about shipping is when they get their car vandalized. So you'll see a lot of that. And second is not all this stuff is true, and it depends a lot from what country you ship to and from. So you guys have more experience shipping in to and from third world countries, but Canada, US, to anywhere in Western Europe is first world to first world. So from what we've been told and our one and only experience is that nothing bad happens. At least on this route from US to Belgium. But that doesn't mean that we didn't worry and prepare the van a whole bunch. Like, you know, we built the van with the intention of having a place where we can kind of put most of our valuable stuff. So we built it with like this underbed storage and everything that we felt was valuable that we want to kind of keep out of sight. We shoved it underneath our bed, and then we cut exact size pieces of plywood at the openings and like screw them in with like 4-inch screws. So somebody who really want to get into it, they'll have to either pry it off or use a screw gun with a square bit to back those screws out to get into it. And what we understand too, a lot of these crimes are sort of crimes of opportunity where it's just somebody in there, you know, they've got a couple minutes and they just want to kind of grab what they can. So our purpose was to kind of avoid that type of vandalism. If they really want to get into our stuff, they'll get into our stuff. And then the other thing that we had to do was they told us they had to have at the most a quarter tank of fuel. It couldn't be more.
Right.
So we dropped our tank. We drove around Baltimore a bunch the whole time we were there. And what we ended up doing is just before we brought it to the port, we filled up our tank so that it was just under a quarter, because for a couple of reasons. One, we don't know how far we have to drive once we got the car until we're able to fill up gas. And second, we knew it was going to be way more expensive in Belgium.
So I was going to say, you're trying to save a few bucks.
Yeah, a couple bucks. That's always the case. So we did that. And then the second thing we had to do, which nobody told us, we just kind of asked them ourselves, like, hey, we have a propane tank in here. What are we supposed to do with that? And that was actually a full day worth of driving around Baltimore trying to figure this out. Because somebody said, oh, yeah, that needs to be purged and tagged. So we called a bunch of people to see, hey, do you guys purge and tag propane tanks? Nobody knew what we were talking about. It was driving around everywhere. We're just like, okay, we can bleed it. We can make sure there's no propane in there. We can put one of those little meters on there that reads empty, like, would that work? Nobody could give us a straight answer. So we ended up calling, like, after like 6 or 7 propane people, we ended up talking to a guy who's like, well, I'll just bleed it for you. I'll handwrite you, you know, a tag that I can tag on the thing that says we empty this tank. For some reason, they didn't want to use the term purged, because there's like a very specific technical method of purging. You essentially have to like replace the gas from inside with, you know, inert, some kind of gas, and then before they can officially tag it. So we drove around a whole bunch to try to figure this out. And then even when we did it, we're like, they may not accept it. But
in the end, they didn't care.
Nobody checked.
Just like every other piece of paper we have or anything else we did.
Yeah. And the other thing we did is we had surfboards on the roof. Mm-hmm. We had water jugs. We emptied all the fluids besides the quarter tank of fuel. And we put the surfboards inside, just because you're supposed to have it empty. And if obviously if you have surfboards hanging on the top, even though we thought that might be better because it would be harder for them to get up to it and grab it and steal it than to just be laying on the bed. It was better because when we brought it into the dock, we wanted the people that were working at the customs office to have the least number of questions possible. And the more like generic the van looked, the better. But you guys have a bunch of stuff hanging on the roof and stuff. So how'd you guys deal with that?
You know, we stored things the way best we could. You know, I think there are cases where there's some vandalism or some petty theft. But in general, security at the ports, all ports, is really good. I mean, I think the best security I've seen was in Cartagena, Colombia. There's cameras everywhere and lots of security guards. But still, I think a lot of the dock workers, you know, if there's something they can put in their pocket, they can might put it in their pocket and walk out of the gate undetected. But you know, nobody's going to rip your solar panels off your surfboards and walk out undetected, I think, in a lot of these ports. I think Cologne, Panama was a little dicey, and so there are some ports maybe where security isn't great, but you know, I think most North American, most European ports, I think you're going to be fine. You only have to worry about petty theft.
I think it comes down to how much is their job worth to them, right? Because if they get caught, right, then it's a big problem.
Is it worth getting busted for, you know, an old GPS unit off the dash or something?
Right.
Probably not.
Yeah, which is why we say North America, Europe, most likely they're getting paid way more to be a longshoreman than they could ever steal from, you know, little things off of somebody's dash.
Yeah, yeah. A friend of ours, he left some coins in the ashtray and decided that was the tip for the driver. Because, you know, when you drop off Roro, you leave the car unlocked with the keys in it at the port. And, you know, the shipping company has drivers that are going to get in your car and drive it onto the boat. And then it's going to sit on the boat, which is probably where a lot of this petty theft occurs, is on the boat during the voyage. He said he left a few bucks there. And, of course, when he picked up his van, those few dollars were gone. But that was it. Nothing else was gone. So
he made the guy feel like he had gotten something out of this and was satisfied. Marlene grew up in next to the Port of LA, and her brother is that guy. Her brother is the guy who drives cars on and off freighters. I mean, not always. They don't always have the same job.
They have different jobs.
But he's often the guy who's driving, you know, cars on and off Roro boats.
Does he come home with a lot of change?
He never comes home with any change.
But he has stories, and he had a story that was messed up like right before we shipped.
Yeah.
Because containers get taken off with a crane, and they get put on like big rigs, and then he drives the big rigs. And there's alarms. So if you hear an alarm, that means something's about to smash into you and you better get out of the way. So there's alarms, so he like kind of floor, you know, you kind of floor it and get out of the way so you don't die, you know, in the port. So he has this row job where he's moving new cars onto the ship and he's driving like a big van. And he hears an alarm, which means get out of the way, get out of the way. If you're on the, you know, on the floor of the port. But on a row, it means the opposite. It means you're too tall. You're going to hit something. So he hears this alarm, and instead of stopping like he's supposed to, he floors it, and he totally smashes his van. And goes, it's like,
remember he's crashing? Like, he's like, it was like a van like yours. He's like, no.
Again, another thing we forgot that's worth mentioning is when your agent gives you the quote, you get an option for shipping insurance.
Right.
For damage to your vehicle. Of course, we decline because we're cheapskates and our van's old or whatever. But if you have a brand new vehicle, maybe you want the shipping insurance.
Maybe Arlene's
brother could end up driving your van out of the port.
We decline.
Maybe you're like us too, and you decline when you do have a brand new vehicle. But it was like, I think the quote was like 1.5% of value, which in our case, you know, we pay like 60 grand for ours, and then we, with the things that we put in, we probably could replace it for like less than 70 grand. So 1.5%, you know, that's a lot. That's almost 10 grand. Well, that's over 10 grand. Yeah. I wasn't going to pay that.
We took a chance and it worked out.
Did I do that math right?
You didn't.
But. No, I don't think so.
But it's a good, but you saved money by not getting that insurance because nothing happened, right?
Yeah, nothing happened. So it's more like a grand. It was a grand. It would be about a grand. But still, it was a grand that I didn't want to spend.
You got the math look from Jason.
I know. But 10 grand sounds way more scary.
Right.
1.5% is just the quote we got. We don't know if that's the case with everybody. I think it's that quote came from the shipping company.
Yeah.
Right? So I think they charged directly you the insurance. The other thing that we had to do when we got it to the port of Baltimore is one of the things that you have to look out for is we were only able to have one person bring the vehicle into the port. Like if we all wanted to go, we couldn't. So the person that had to do it, I mean, we don't know if I could have done it instead of you, but Marlene was the person that handled all the paperwork. So her name was on the dock receipt and all this stuff. So we ended up having her take it into the port just because we don't want any confusions. So whoever is more comfortable dealing with this stuff in person should also be the person who deals with all the paperwork.
Yeah, I went to drop ours off thinking my name's on the title. I need to be the guy to drop it off. But in the end, nobody checked my ID. There was nothing. Anybody could have taken this thing into the port.
Well, they checked your ID for sure.
I had the opposite problem because we shipped out of Baltimore, and that is next to D.C. So that is like a highly secured port. And I couldn't just walk in. I had to hire an escort for $100.
I did too. And it was 50 in Galveston. It's $50 for this port escort. And it's a random guy who you literally pay $50 cash to show up to the gate, and you follow him into the port. But nobody checked my ID. Nobody checked my title or anything. I didn't even have the title.
But the $100 is just the price this guy came up with. We had two quotes. One guy wanted $150. This guy wanted $100. So we chose $100. We were skeptical. We're like, who is this guy? Like, what do we know? Like, what's the deal? And then he shows up, you know, with a pretty legit looking car with a port play. And he was wearing a yellow vest.
Yeah.
You know, he was an older guy.
Still could have killed me.
Still could have killed us for sure. Or Marlene for sure. But so yours was 50, ours was 100, so consider that into the cost. 7 days before. So once you drop it in, as far as the vehicle owner's concerned, it is shipping because you don't see it again until you get it. You don't get to go into the port to get something if you forget. You don't get to go check on it if you want. There is no, because what happens with these row, you know, ships, it's not like, yeah, they just start dumping containers one on top of the other. They have to organize what goes in first and what comes out first, depending on where a vehicle needs to be offloaded at what port. Especially in your case, when there's a bunch of ports, that happens. They'll probably have to stash yours all the way up in the back, and it probably comes out last.
Yeah, and these boats have heavy equipment on them. I mean, tractors, farm equipment. I mean, there's all kinds of equipment that's being shipped on these row vehicles. And so that's why you have to be there a week in advance, because they're trying to figure out how to put all the stuff on the boat.
Right. So you overheard some conversation while you're at the port about how, like, you know, the Fast and Furious guy was shipping his, like, 45-foot movie trailer mm-hmm. to some South Africa or something. And then they were using some bad language. And then one of the guys told them to, like, behave because there's a lady present or something.
Yeah. And they're saying, don't worry, I cuss more than all you guys put together.
Yeah, so what about your fuel? Did you have to leave it quarter tank or less? Did they
same
care?
Same quarter tank. Nobody checked. Nobody cared. I mean, I remember driving around for like an extra half hour before I dropped off
burn
the
it.
Van, like watching the needle, thinking, well, you know, I don't want to be rejected.
Right.
The last thing you want to do is show up when at your drop off and then have there be a problem.
Yeah.
But
nobody checked.
Did you do anything else to prepare the van?
I did a lot of work on the van because it had a lot of problems, and then I didn't do enough, and so when it arrived, I had more work to do. But I would highly recommend that you be very ready with your vehicle. If it's an older vehicle or if a vehicle that has problems, take your time and make sure it's ready before you ship it.
But it was drivable. I mean,
drivable.
At the end, it has to be drivable,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's a requirement when you sign this document is that...
Angela's shaking her head.
The day before he was supposed to drop it off at the port, he sent me a photo. The engine was still out of the van.
I did drop the engine, but you know how easy it is to take the engine out and to put it back in? That's the beauty of the old Volkswagen.
He also said, oh, I'm going to put all these locks on all the cabinets when we put our stuff in. He didn't do any of that.
Yeah, we had
a list, and you're going to have a list too. You're going to have a list a mile long before you ship your car. And you got to prioritize and figure, I'm only going to do half of these. So.
Right. We had all these plans, and we were like, oh, we're going to be there like a week before it ships. We're going to have all this time. But then we get to Baltimore, we get to Maryland, and we get to Virginia, and it was like so hot. It was so humid, so hot. And where do we have to do this? We did it in the parking lot of a Home Depot. I guess I don't have a jigsaw or a circular saw. How am I going to cut these like perfectly shaped and sized pieces of plywood and drill it in? And I'm like, you know what, let's just, you know, see if they'll cut it for us. So then, yeah, at Home Depot, they'll cut you know, whatever size piece of wood you
or
want.
Or they'll rent you the
for
saw.
For price. Or they'll rent you a saw.
You've done a lot of work.
But you have to do that in the parking lot. But if it's really, like, it was so hot, we're like, I was like it felt like a hot sauna. I'm just dripping, trying to screw this stuff in. So the last thing you want to do in those situations is to sit outside and work on putting stuff away for days at a time.
Right.
So we did probably everything that we ended up doing in like half a day, in the day before we brought it in.
Of course.
You know.
I'm laughing because Luke has to go poop. I don't want to help him.
And he's very respectful. He's very respectful of the podcast, so he's trying to not make a lot of noise.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
Until he starts farting.
So, but you had to do work on your van after you picked it up, but they were able to drive it off.
Yeah, they were able to drive it off, and I was able to pick it up and drive it 100 kilometers before I got
there. Before you had to go work on it.
Yeah.
Okay. So, the voyage... You know, there's not much you can do, but they do give you, or I don't know if they gave it to us. We asked for a link to see if we can track the ship. And then we ended up finding, you click through a bunch of stuff and you do some searches of the name of your boat that it's on. And then you can get these web pages that have the actual live location of the boat that's carrying your home.
Yeah, marinetraffic.com has every commercial vessel in the world, and you can track it on a Google map. It's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
This exists. So if you know the name of your boat, even before you drop it off, you can see your boat coming in, so you know when it's coming into the port.
Yeah.
But also your shipper and your shipping agent should give you the equivalent of a tracking number when you ship your car. And you can go to your shipper, in our case it was Wallenius Williamson, and they, you know, just like FedEx, you enter your number, and then it tells you where it's at in the process. Has it been received? Has it been cleared through customs? What port was it onloaded? At what port it's going to be offloaded? Things like that. So you can more or less track your vehicle in real time.
That's how we knew that it went to two extra ports, because they didn't tell us. We had to see it literally pull into a port and stop there for a night or two and then leave to know. And also, after our ship left North America, it fell off the radar for like 4 days. Like, I wasn't able to track it for like 4 days. And then suddenly it popped back up when it got closer to the UK. So I don't know if that's normal. Like, were you able to track it across the Atlantic the whole way?
I was. And so all these boats use AIS, and that requires VHF in range. So maybe they were just not in range
maybe.
Of another ship. But that seems unlikely because these shipping lanes are packed with commercial vessels.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, because I remember seeing it, and it's like, oh, it's right off of the coast of, you know, New York, and it was like there for 4 days. I'm like, oh my God, the boat is stuck. The boat is caught in the Bermuda Triangle. Like,
well, sometimes these boats turn off their AIS for, you know, illicit reasons. So who knows what else was happening on your boat?
We had a pretty cool thing happen to us. We were concerned about whether or not the boat made it or if it's going to sail. And we contacted our agents. Hey, can you let us know if it's on the boat, if it's okay? Like, what's going on? Like, when is it going to sail? She said, oh, we don't know any of that stuff yet. But what the cool thing that happened to us was, because we have our website on the side of our van, we had two longshoremen independently take pictures of our van as it is strapped down in the deck of the boat and then send it to us through Instagram.
That's super cool.
Yeah, so we actually... It was good to have that context to know, like, the car, what car was behind it, you know, what was around it, how it was strapped down, and who to go after if things go missing. No, these two people were super cool. I don't think they knew each other, but, you know, they went to our website, went to our Instagram, and sent us the photos directly. So as it goes across, and this is getting pretty much to the end of the process, we waited in Belgium. So we flew. You fly separately like you would travel. And obviously we didn't have a car at this point, and we just packed whatever we had that we thought we needed for that period of time. Ours ended up being, what did we say, like 25 days probably?
It was originally quoted 11 days, plus the 7 before
right.
it sailed.
And the couple days at the end.
So it was longer.
Yeah, so we stayed in a hotel for 16 days in the D.C. area, and then we flew to Belgium. And then we got to the town of Oostende, Belgium. And we stayed for another 8 days or 8 or 9 days there. Which again, like what Jason was saying earlier, that it adds to the cost of the actual shipping process. But what's going on over here?
I don't know. I think maybe Luca.
What do you need, Luca? Luca, say hi. Say hi to the people listening to the podcast.
Hi.
Did you clog the toilet? This is what the listeners want to know.
No.
I just want to make sound.
You can flush the toilet, please.
Oh, my God.
Please do.
Please. We had to close the window, so it's hot in here already. We don't need anything brewing. So when we actually got the confirmation from the shipping agent on this side, on the Europe side, on Belgium side for us, that we had to figure out exactly when to go get it and all that. And then we kind of did the reverse of dropping off when we pick up.
Picking up was way easier because on Baltimore, I had to go through so many hoops of license plates and security checks and getting tickets and escorts and go to custom office and then going into the shipper's office and then following a car to my spot, kind of like a KOA kind of.
Oh, speaking of which, what we took, they recommended that we take our license plates off during the shipping process.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've never done it. Each time I've...
You didn't do it?
No, never done it. I've heard it's a souvenir, you know, but the same thing. I think it would take so much time and effort for someone interested
right.
in stealing a random license plate. It's really not worth it to them to lose their job
right.
like that if they got caught.
I guess they recommended because it would be a huge hassle for us if
it
does
be.
Happen.
Yeah,
right.
It would be.
So just if it's not a big deal for you to take it off, it's just one less thing to worry about.
Right.
But in general, I'd recommend putting on some sort of difficult to remove bolts.
Like a security bolt or something.
For just, not even for shipping, just if you're going to be driving around another country where your plate is a novelty.
Right.
People, your plates are going to attract interest, and so you want to make it. And there are some countries where the police are known to remove your plates so that you go pay your ticket at the local police station.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You just want to make it hard in general for people to remove your plates.
I mean, I think they do that in Mexico.
Yeah.
So that's a good point, because it's not just, it wouldn't just be a big problem for somebody to steal it from the ship. It's a big problem if somebody were stealing it right now, right here in Croatia.
Great. Should we go to the car right now?
okay, so specific to Europe, you need to have what they called green card insurance, right? And that's liability insurance that covers you in all of EU.
Yeah,
is that right?
They call it third party insurance, but it's the equivalent of our liability insurance in the US. And it's surprisingly difficult to buy if you have a foreign registered vehicle. So we really only found one company that would do it. We went to this company called Tour Insure. They're out of Germany. Their website's tourinsure.de. And they have flat rate pricing for their liability insurance, which is about like $150 per month, regardless of the vehicle. And so that's what we've ended up with. I don't know if you guys found something different.
What did we use?
We used the same company. We got two different quotes, actually, and it was about 500 euros cheaper. With Tour Insure, so that's who we went with.
Which was like 1600 a year or something? Do you remember?
I think so. It was like 1100 euros, I think.
Right.
For 12 months. I don't know if you guys, how many months you guys
did. Yeah, we got a 6-month policy, so that probably cost a little more.
And you just renew?
Yeah, you just renew. And also, when you leave the EU, there's border insurance. You can just buy your car insurance at the border.
Oh, for that country that's not in the
EU. So, yeah, we just went to Bosnia, and for 15 euros a week, you can buy liability insurance. You're required. They won't even let you pass the border until you get it. Same with Montenegro, and I'm sure for lots of other countries.
Same kind of thing you would do if you're driving to Mexico.
Yeah, yeah, and our trip through South America, the same. You could just buy it. In each country, you'd buy it when you entered the country. And it was far, far cheaper than if you were to try to get some large policy that covered all these countries from your home insurance provider.
I think that probably exists, and more people do that because for all the EU cars, when they go to Montenegro, Bosnia, they have to do the same thing. Versus people like us shipping our vehicle from the US to the EU, it's relatively few of us that do it. So it's not just like you can't just go to the dock and like there'll be like an office there for you to buy this. You kind of have to do this yourself ahead of time.
Yeah.
But we weren't able to. They told us that if we didn't have it, we wouldn't even get our boat from the dock.
Our car,
I mean. Mm-hmm. Yeah, from the boat.
Yeah, I don't remember being checked for it when I left the port, but I have been asked for it multiple times since then.
Since you've been here.
Yeah.
And then once we got to the docks, we had to pay, and this kind of differs ours versus your experience too, because we ship to a different country, even though it's, well, actually UK is not, well, it's a situation in limbo, right? Whether they're EU or not.
EU.
So they're still EU. So technically it should be the same, but even every country in the EU, there's different import fees. And the reason why we chose Belgium versus Germany, for example, or the Netherlands, for example, is because it was going to be much cheaper. The import taxes are much cheaper in Belgium than it would have been in Germany. So
we didn't pay any tax.
Which I think is why maybe that price was different for you and us too. Because I think every country is different. Hmm. We were told that had we shipped our car and picked it up in Germany, we would pay an equivalent of 25% of the value of the vehicle just to bring it in.
So it should be temporary import, but I've heard there's a deposit you might have to pay.
Yeah, maybe
that you get refunded when you export the vehicle.
Just in case you don't leave.
Yeah, yeah.
They keep it.
But in our case, coming into the UK, we only had two fees. One was an unloading fee of £70, and the other was the agent fee who handled customs for us, which was another £75 or so. So around $200 or so, a little less than $200 to get the car out of the port. Mm-hmm. And that was it. So it was, for us, our total fees were about $1,000 on the U.S. side, and that's the freight plus the agent fees and all the documentation fees. And about FedEx and all that other stuff. Yeah, about $1,000 on the U.S. side and about another $200 on the U.K. side. So $1,200 total to ship it.
So for us, it was about double.
Right. Our car is about double the size.
Bigger car.
Yeah, bigger car. And I think most of the fees were because of the size. Right, because you say yours was like $800. No, like $800 just for the freight.
Yeah, our freight was $750, I think.
Yeah, and I think our freight was like $1,700.
Yeah, our U.S. side was $17-something plus $100 for escort. And then when we picked up, I had to pay another $600. So it was $2,500 total.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how to attribute the difference between your $200 pickup fee versus our $600 pickup fee. And the thing that makes sense to me is that we use different agents and we ship to different countries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they charge you some kind of tax, which we didn't get.
Right. And you know, we can kind of break down this the actual price list item by item on the podcast notes as well, if anybody's interested. Okay. But I think that's pretty much it. You know, the whole time you give your key to them, and then when you get it. So, I mean, it was exciting for us when we finally got it back.
Did we get anything stolen? I don't think we got anything stolen.
We got nothing stolen.
Did you guys get anything stolen?
We didn't get anything stolen. The only thing we couldn't find was an extension cord, but I'm guessing it's on the floor in my brother's workshop. So
you're not sure.
Probably nothing stolen.
Or some dude in the UK is
maybe, yeah.
Blowing
struggling
up his,
with a
sweet cord. He's
wondering why it doesn't plug in.
Plug in, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think that pretty much covers the whole process, do you think? Is there anything else that you think we missed?
Well, so there's a whole lot of complicated stuff that's probably a whole other podcast based on living and driving around Europe in a vehicle
that's
not a European-registered vehicle.
Right, that's another podcast.
Yeah. Let's just give them a little tease.
All right.
You guys are here a lot longer than us. We just got here.
The good news is you can totally do it. You can bring your car from the U.S. It doesn't cost a fortune to ship it, equivalent to probably whatever you paid for your plane ticket. And you can...
And one of the reasons that we chose to ship it was because it's semi-difficult to buy. We looked into buying something here in Europe.
Yeah, which is also
doable.
And you
need residency to register a car. And we didn't have that. And a lot of people can do that. A lot of people can...
And there are ways around that,
there's ways around it, but from our place, from where we were in the mountains of Colorado, we couldn't figure out an easy way to do it. And so we thought, we'll just do it when we get there and figure it out. And then we're like, where are we going to stay? How are we going to go see these things? I mean, it just, then all of a sudden $1,200 seemed really cheap compared to like hotels and rental cars and trains and all of that. So anyway, that's just.
Yeah, if you've got your camper that you love and it's all set up, for sure, you should ship it to Europe or to Africa or to South America or wherever and go travel around in your van.
Yeah, not only is it better to kind of have your own stuff with you. Most people that I've talked to who ended up buying something here ended up spending more time getting it ready before they get to go somewhere. And on top of it, when they leave, they lose money when they sell.
Yeah.
So a lot of the times when they sell, the way that the people that I've seen, they definitely lose more than $2,000, which means for you guys, you would actually end up spending less paying shipping both ways.
Oh, yeah. If we were going to try to buy something here, we'd pay a premium for buying it in Europe. Then you would have to outfit it at European prices, which are much higher than the U.S. And in the end, I'm sure we have to sell on some time deadline because we'd have to fly back for whatever reason, and we'd probably lose money there too. But
yeah, our friend Andrew, who just came here for 6 months, he's from Canada. So I don't know if he deals with the same time, like Schengen, EU sort of timeline.
I think so.
Right? I think it's the same. Mm-hmm. He lost, what did he lose? He lost almost 10 grand, 7 grand, right? He bought He bought like a T5 Volkswagen camper van. Needed a lot of work. He had, this is very anecdotal, so not everybody's experience would be the same. Like our friend Luis, who bought a Sprinter here, loves it, keeps it here when he's back there, right? But Andrew had a nightmare of a time getting the thing just to run right the whole time he's here. And when he was, you know, like you said, he had a timeline to be able to sell it so he can go back. At some point, you have to lose a bunch of money just so you don't have to deal with it. So I think he would have been better off shipping his Volkswagen bus from Canada to here.
Well, and probably selling it here at a premium, too, if you don't mind selling your vehicle. Sell it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there are a lot of U.S. vehicles or even European vehicles that are older that are in the U.S. that are now worth significantly more here in Europe than they are back in the U.S. So if you have one of those vehicles, shipping it to Europe makes a whole lot of sense because when you're done traveling around, you can probably sell it at a pretty good markup compared to what you could sell it back in the U.S.
You guys have been to some Volkswagen get-togethers and stuff in Europe now. So do you think that's the case for you? You think you'd be able to sell it to somebody who wants a T2?
Like, for sure. Yeah. No.
More than you could sell it for there.
Absolutely. Everywhere we've been, people ask if our car's for sale.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, somebody asked us that in Alaska too when we met you guys, but Angela wasn't ready.
Couldn't afford a hotel there.
No, couldn't afford a hotel. And tenting it wasn't an option.
It's getting cold.
Yeah.
We couldn't even afford the fruit there.
Yeah, and I used to own a 64 split window that is now in the UK.
And you still regret selling it, right?
Oh, I mean, I was forced to sell it. Oh, yeah. So I'm hoping...
I did not force you. You chose to buy a boat.
I shed a single tear when the truck came to pick it up. And it was like, it was one of these things where I didn't think it was real because the guy offered me money, asking price. He was going to pay me over PayPal. I'm like, this is suspicious. And I Googled him and saw that he was a lawyer in Ireland or somewhere. And truck came, his money cleared, got loaded on the, you know, flatbed truck and left. So when we go to UK, we're going to go look for him.
We need to go find this.
Yeah, we need to go find this guy.
Are you saying the whole reason we're Europe is so you can find your bus and they'll rebuy it?
Uh-huh. And when he's not looking, I'm going to pull out my spare key that I've been keeping this whole time and drive it away. Yeah, so that's... As far as we're concerned, even for our size vehicle, which will cost $5,000 round trip, shipping here and shipping back, it's still worth it just because we know that you can easily lose $5,000. You can easily spend $5,000 just to outfit it, to get solar panels, to get electronics, to get, you know, and the time that you spend staying at a hotel or wherever you're staying, paying to stay while you're building this, you can easily spend $5,000 just during that period. And on top of that, you'll lose money when you sell, chances are.
Right.
So.
Well, and to be fair, you could pay way too much to ship your car to Europe too, right? So you need to do your due diligence. If you listen to this entire podcast, which it's amazing if you did.
Yeah,
but,
right?
But there,
don't you have something
it's
better
not
to do?
It's that difficult, but there are a lot of steps. And in each one of those steps, you need to do your research to make sure that you're not getting ripped off.
Right. So I think that's why it's good that we're sharing two recent experiences, you know, this being October 2018. You guys shipped in April?
March.
We just got ours last month here. So the price difference between a 71 VW bus and a 2017 Sprinter extended wheelbase high roof.
That was new off the lot, baby, 2017.
We're old school. The price of somebody else's vehicle likely falls in between that. Between $1,200 and $2,500 and change.
Yeah, ours is a very small camper. You have
a very
camper.
Big one.
And I would also...
So you shouldn't be paying more than $2,500.
After being in the UK, especially, I would not recommend sending a big American RV.
No, not like a Class C or... Yeah, I mean,
They exist here, but you would be severely limited in where you could go.
Right, right. Just like a size of a Class C, which a typical Class C RV in the U.S. is wider than their RVs here, as it is. Because I think they're 8.5 feet long or wide. And I don't think I've seen anything that's that wide. Even the big rigs aren't that wide.
We went through one toll booth where we thought we were going to scratch up both sides. Because we accidentally went through the regular car versus like the little truck side. And if we had our four-wheel camper,
Parking sensors. You know, you guys have parking sensors, right? Those things that beep when you get too close.
What's that? I have to roll down the window manually.
That's Angela yelling.
She's the sensor, yeah.
Well, my parking sensors are beeping like crazy as I'm driving through, even though I'm not touching. So
it's tight. Everything, it seems more narrow. And I would say that there are a lot of super tall vehicles here, but...
Width is a problem. Is important.
Length can be too, because we're worried about driving it through like the village that Marlene's dad grew up on the island of Hoar here. We're worried about this one corner that you have to go through to get to the house. Mm-hmm. That way that we wouldn't fit.
We just have to park somewhere else. Just like here. We're in a big city, but we can't even park by our apartment.
Yeah, we need two spaces because we're long. So we're 22 and a half feet long. What are you guys?
10.
10, 11? Half. Yeah. Half in every dimension and then some. So whatever you guys are shipping here, most likely it'll be somewhere in between.
You mean Angela.
But, you know, like you said, on the ship, next to your car and next to our car were these huge things.
Yep.
So, you know... They're not things that are meant to be driven around everywhere, but they do have big things here. Our van is actually, the size of our van is, even here in Split, it's everywhere. Every day we go down there, there's that Dennis the Menace shuttle bus that drives around, picking people up, going somewhere. It's bigger than ours.
Oh, yeah, there's giant buses.
Giant buses, accordion buses that turn, so, you know. But, yeah, like...
But they're not driving around the Island of Loire.
Yeah. No, exactly.
On the major city streets.
We have to be aware we're returning.
Yeah. And if you have something big here, just know that you'll have to buy a cool little scooter and mount it on the back so you can go into town.
That's pretty common, actually.
Yeah. You see that a lot. Electric bikes, maybe?
Oh, my God. This is Dan working the conversation to Amazon shipment from Germany.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's another podcast we'll talk about, like, trying to get, you know... Amazon packages, or if you want to buy something here, like one of the things that you want to make sure you do before you come here is get it prepped and ready and have all the things that you think you're going to need that's expensive to buy here. Because most things in Croatia, especially, you can't even get it here. You can't even buy it. You go on Amazon Germany, Amazon UK, you can order things and it'll get shipped here. They do have Amazon here, but a lot of things that you would want, it says this item cannot be shipped to Croatia. So,
any specialty item or anything electronic.
Electronics especially.
Buy it in the U.S. Yes. Yeah. Everything else you can buy here. You can buy clothes here. You can buy anything else you need here. But
no jalapeno peppers. No cilantro. No.
No Halloween costumes.
No Halloween costumes. You can buy tortillas here now, which is surprising.
Yeah.
It is surprising.
That wasn't there before. So, I think that's it. Do we think we covered it pretty good?
Well enough. And if not, if you have any questions, you should contact Dan.
Contact us through our blog, MarlingWeeks.com. And if you have Jason's specific questions, bodeswell.com. You guys used to have .org, right?
We have both, yeah.
But how did you... Was .com not available at first?
Well, they...
It wasn't.
It actually wasn't, yeah. So we got .org, and then I think they got...
It was like a dog...
Somebody breeder. In Australia, like a dog breeder, had it.
Yeah? He was like, and they coughed it up?
For like $50, you want to buy it? All right.
Oh, nice. Okay. Nice. All right. Bodeswell.com. All questions, Jason. All questions, Volkswagen. If he's willing to do somebody's...
Or we talked about Europe, so no joke. So we spent a good 5 years traveling around South America, and we shipped to and from. So we'll be happy to answer any questions you have about both shipping... and or traveling around South America in your camper. Angela will answer.
Angela's got all the answers.
She just... the look she's giving me right now.
Yeah. Angela's doing a lot of head shaking, a lot of looks, but she doesn't know that's not good for radio. But, you know, again, I want to make sure that, you know, this podcast is something that we can kind of point somebody to if they think they want to do the same thing with a camper, they want to ship to Europe. And hopefully by sharing our two experiences, that it covers enough of a gamut to give you guys an idea of what it would be like for you to go through this. And we have only been here for about a month and a half, right? When did we get here?
17th of September.
Okay, not even a month.
No.
2 weeks.
Three. Not even a month. 3 weeks. 3 weeks. Feels longer for some reason. So, you know, there's still a lot more to come, but you guys been here 5 months, right? Coming on 6. So, you know, we're planning to be here for at least a year, maybe 2. You guys are going back, but then coming back after the ski season in Colorado.
Vehicle storage, that's a whole other podcast.
Whole other podcast. And I think we'll have to do that one. We'll have to do all the logistics of having your vehicle in the EU and Europe in general, a US vehicle, right? Because then I didn't want to do this one until we have all the answers from our experience. Right. And then we still have some missing pieces for this whole, like, 90 day in, 98 day out possible thing that we don't know yet. So when you guys come back from your... You guys are going on a 4-month ski trip.
After our car's impounded, we'll tell you all about it.
Yep. Take your license plates off.
Yeah. Yeah. You should take it off and leave it here so it doesn't get stolen. But, you know, that'll definitely be another one. But thank you, Jason, Angela, for joining us on this podcast.
Sure thing.
It was very helpful. Angela's giving me a thumbs up, which is not good for radio.
You can't hear that.
Terrible, Angela.
You know what? I don't know. For those of you that don't know Angela... You usually can't get her to shut up.
Got her on an off night.
Yeah, I know. You guys would just have to meet her in person, and then you'll know she's... Maybe she hasn't had enough to drink.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe too much.
Maybe too much. Okay. Well, that's it. That's it for this episode. Episode number 3. And I want to thank all of you guys who are subscribing. And if you're not subscribed, you can get this podcast through iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, I believe. We're on also, I think we're on Spotify now, finally. And we're on one other thing.
I
forget which one it is. But for the most part, you can just search for Molly Mitch Podcast in Google and be able to find it. We will try to bring you guys a new podcast. Hopefully once a week. I know it's been more than that since our last one, but we wanted to make sure that Jason and Angela were here because we wanted to do this episode about shipping your vehicle. And I think that's been really helpful. At least it's allowed me to kind of see, you know, that our experience is not going to be exactly what another person's experience is going to be. So. Your experience might be totally different, but hopefully this helps. And if you guys have any comments, go ahead and go to mollymitch.com/podcast and enter that in the comments of this episode. And we'll try to answer them the best we can. And like Jason said, send us emails if you have anything that you want clarified. And that's it. Thank you for listening. We'll see you guys can we see them? We can't see them.
They'll hear us in episode 4.
We
look forward to being with you in the next episode.
All right. Good night, Irene.
Bye.
Good night. Say good night, Angela.
Good night, Angela.